Ladies and gentlemen, we are back in the final installment of our three-part series. You know where we did a deep dive into each of your hosts? The first one you had, just a refresher course, the first one you had was yours truly, Michael McCool. Then you had Karim Ellis, aka Rimsey. And today, Stephan Campbell, soon to be Dr. Campbell. How are you doing, Steph?
Great enough.
Yeah, and as usual, you have Karim Ellis here tonight, and we're ready to put Steph on the hot seat, right, Karim?
Bless. We're ready.
Steph, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I can't complain. All right, I'll put you on my Trini accent for this episode.
We're
plugging in the Trini accent for this episode.
We're coming up, bro. But we're picking up right where we left off with Rimsey, because Rimsey shut down the last question I asked, which means I got the distinct pleasure of saving it for you. So, Steph, what do you want to be written on your tombstone?
Well, first things first, I don't even want a tombstone.
Fair enough.
I actually want to be cremated and you sprinkle my ashes in one of the childhood beaches I used to go. A tombstone means nothing. If you don't actually have an impact on people's lives. So whoever has that power to decide what they probably want to say in the tribute, they can say it. I mean, it's either they're right or they're wrong. Either way, I would have no say in it. But I think about giving people their roses while they're alive. And I also feel like I need to get my roses while I'm alive. Do anything after that, I can vouch for.
So tell me, who is Stephan Campbell?
Let me give you all a history lesson. Stephan Campbell grew up in a small village called Mount Pleasant, Tobago. But even back then, I think I thought about things that were far beyond my years. My imagination was wild and vivid, and it's like I always had the challenge of restricting my imagination or even my dreams to make people around me feel comfortable. And I think there was always a person or people, not close, because my immediate family or friends, they would always encourage. But there's always some negative person who would tell you that wouldn't happen or that wouldn't be the case. My family wasn't rich, but they also weren't poor. But there was still like this sense that you should be restricted in the things that you wanted to achieve or even where you wanted to go. I mean, what's the odds of somebody just picking up and coming to Jamaica, no family, no anybody here, and starting a new life? I became an adult in Jamaica and all of those things. So that's it in a nutshell. I think my life starts between my two ears, my mind. If you believe that's where the mind is located, but that's where I spend most of my time, in my head and in my mind. And everything that comes to fruition, chances I have thought about it long, long before time actually caught up with it.
So, Steph, you know, quite recently you shared a nugget of information that I'm sure everybody was surprised to hear, that you used to be a youth pastor. you shared that. So, you know, I was just wondering, do you have any other pieces of information that, you know, our listeners might find equally as shocking to learn about you?
So I mean, there's definitely the youth pastor side. As a matter of fact, I had to choose between coming to Jamaica to study media and communication and going to theological college to become a pastor.
Pastor Steph.
The rest is history, because there were some things I couldn't reconcile. And I never wanted to feel, I have a conscience. I didn't want to feel like I was leading people to something that I didn't necessarily believe 100% in. So I chose that path. I've been defined by a lot of people as the one who listens. I listen a lot, but doesn't necessarily share. So a lot of my past is concealed, hidden from eyes and ears. But I have seen, witnessed, been involved in things that are not necessarily formally sanctioned by the law. And I've seen this side as well. And it's an interesting thing to straddle, because I know people from all walks of life. And when I say all walks of life, I mean all walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody has a story to tell. My story is still being written. And I haven't thought of a conclusion yet. But, you know, sometimes when I think about it, I say, if I hadn't been through or gone through situations personally, I wouldn't necessarily believe. And the rare occasions when I share certain situations with people, people are like, that could never happen. I'm like, well, I have been in fights that should have ended my life, guns pointed in my face. Yeah, like all of these things. I think I should be traumatized, but I look at them as experiences that help build you. But there's nothing that I necessarily dwell on. I think every story, every element of my story can help somebody if they're willing to listen. Because I just don't go around talking about my experiences. That's just not me.
And, you know, for those listening, I'm sure you've heard, you know, you heard that statement about gun pointed in his face. And I know what you're all thinking. Steph must have been a black belt because he's here today. So I'm sure he doesn't wish to share that.
I'm a black belt.
Listen, you see what happens when you listen, people? When you listen. See?
Actually, I'm a black belt, but I stopped doing karate since high school. And even then, I learned karate in order to fight bullies. I think that's one thing that defines me. Like people could do anything to me and get away. I do not like bullies in any realm, legally, illegally, high school, university, in any walks of life. I don't like when people take advantage of other people, less fortunate, weaker people. And I think that's been a major defining point in my life. And I think it's probably because growing up, I understood what it meant to have low self-esteem or somebody, or feel like no, there's nobody there to defend you. So I sort of took that upon myself. So me learning karate and all of that wasn't necessarily to defend myself, but was to defend other people. I'm good. I'm quite fine. It's neither here nor there how people feel like they can treat me. I think I have a high tolerance for all sorts of pain, but it's my biggest peeve.
Steph the vigilante.
Abuse other people.
So that's interesting. Right. So we're sticking a pin in your vigilante history for a bit. So we're sticking a pin there because I find it interesting. And we're going to jump forward a little bit. You know, you mentioned, you know, not liking bullies. No, you know, we know how we, from previous episodes and even outside of this forum, you know, the conversations you, Rimzi, and I would have, we know how thoughtful you are in relationships and about the relationships you share with people. So how do you reconcile, you know, your disdain for bullies against being perceived as somebody in certain relationships as somebody who might take emotional advantage, or that, you know, some women might say, oh, you know, you're this and you're that, because, you know, you've had some of those experiences. So how do you sort of straddle that line when women start to, you know, remove all culpability of themselves from a situation and put the blame on you to make you out to be a bully? How do you handle that?
For the people who have, I had no intention of hurting, I have apologized. For the people who I intentionally hurt, I have I've also apologized. That's just me being responsible. I would not be a hypocrite to say I didn't play the game, right? Mm-hmm. And I have caused emotional hurt. Now, mm-hmm. after I've apologized and after I've made amends, if you want to accept it, that's on you. Once my conscience is clear, fine, right? But I think oftentimes we are made to seem like we are the only ones causing hurt. If I express how many times I've had my heart broken, because I probably won't be a romantic like Natu, but I but I throughout my life I fall easily. Oh, I shouldn't.
Well, say you're a hopeless romantic,
way
right?
Too easily,
hopeless romantic.
It's not even romantic. I just see the best in people, you know. So I give you a chance, but sometimes mm-hmm. giving somebody a chance is giving them a chance to hurt you as well, you know.
So
I'd gotten to that point where like, listen, since everybody out here hurting me, might as well I start to do that to other people, you know? And plus, if you saw me like this before I even do anything, there is no real benefit of me being a better person. If you're going to still be involved with me while acknowledging that I'm a bad person.
So two things. How long did it take you to get to that point? Because I'm checking my orgasm, you know. No, but seriously though, I find it interesting, you know, that perspective, because I want to know then, you've always seen the best in people. You know, that's just who you are. But what do you think people see in you? What's the first thing you think people, the impression you think people get of you?
When I knew myself, as long as I could know myself, I think there was always the need to try to please others or help mm-hmm. others and all of those things, which was fine. But it got to a point where I could not hear my own voice before I hear others. Right. And so the reason I'm looking at suicide among Caribbean men is because of my own thoughts in my early 20s. Mm. And that was because it had gotten to the point where there was everybody else's voice in my head. It wasn't depression or anything. It was just everybody's trying to help and please everybody else except yourself. Mm. You must crumble at some point. And so that was the breaking point. Fortunately, and it took me how much years? 7-8 years to even talk or be comfortable with that. But after mm-hmm. that is when I stopped thinking for people. And after that is when I stopped worrying about what people thought about me. So form any opinion you want of me, right? That's not my concern, which is why I'm also so honest now, because my honesty is not for the other person, good or bad. My honesty, mm-hmm. if I hurt you from my honesty, that's for you to deal with. If I heal you from my honesty, that is for you to deal with. It has nothing to do with me at all, right? And so that's the point I had gotten at. And when you get to that point, that's when you know real freedom. That's when you can walk, you can wake up in the morning, you can dress how you dress, you can do what you do, and not worry about what people think. There's a saying, I heard it recently, what the ideas people form about you in their mind is theirs. That's not yours. You know, I remember even when I started getting tattoos, and people are like, yo, you're not gonna get no job and this and that, and what would people think of you? And I'm like, if someone chooses not to hire me because I have tattoos, they don't deserve me, not the other way around. And a lot of people walk around living their life for other people. That is the strangest shit. That is the strangest shit. Plus, I mean, going back to the first question he asked, you know, what I would say on my tombstone. Listen, we all have to die and we all have to live. And the least you could do, you owe it to yourself, is to live your life on your own terms.
I love that. But, Steph, what drives you? What gets your gears turning? What gets you up in the morning and keeps you going?
It's just my imagination. I know this is always the question, what if or why mm-hmm. not? Like, mm-hmm. you know, like when I wake up in the morning, like, what if I did this?
why can't I do this? So anything that comes to my mind, there's always that question of okay, should I do this? Even if it doesn't turn out how I expected, which oftentimes I don't even have any expectations. Sometimes I just do things. I'm gonna say that sometimes people laugh, but it's a serious thing. Like, I think sometimes we try to find reasons, and sometimes we reason ourselves out of some possibilities and some opportunities that would change your life. Even like this podcast, if we had sat and thought about every single thing that we were doing, chances are it would not be this real. It would not be this impactful. You know, sometimes you just need to get up and do it.
You know, considering your experiences, you know, what's the most profound thing you have learned when you look back on all that you've been through that led you up to this point?
One profound thing that I've learned is, you know, let people be people, man. Like, if you just let people be people like you, your life would be better and people's lives would be better too. You get the most out of people and you get the most out of yourself. Like, think about it. We get angry off us, somebody else having a different political view, a different religion, a different sexual orientation, a different relationship preference. Majority of our mind is occupied with other people. You know? I think that's a sickness. So the most, like, the thing I've learned is to just listen, think about it. If you just let people live their lives, think about how much time, mental space you have freed up to live your own life and be the best person you could be. Just think about it. You know, so many people spend their entire lives on IG thinking about Khloe Kardashian and Kim and everybody. And, you know, everybody else except themselves. Listen, I'm not saying something might interest you, but when it becomes a habit, when it becomes a part of your life, to constantly check on everybody else, and not just check, but to have a judgment, pass a judgment. If I didn't mean me, wouldn't make him do that. Or, would I never met that girl to do that. Like, when you spend all of that time doing that, like, how much of your own life is left? Think about it. 28,000 days in our entire lives. That's, when you put it in that way, it's terrifying. Because 28,000 days is not a lot of days. Right?
No. Nope.
Right? And when you break it down like that, you realize how much time you're wasting focusing on other people. Right? So, I've learned to strike the balance between caring about people and not caring about what those people think. It's a strange balance, but that's the balance I've had to strike. And just let people be people, man. You can care, you can help, but anything beyond that, mind your business, stay hydrated.
So Steph, what do you think, you know, is your greatest accomplishment so far?
My greatest accomplishment so far is maintaining the right type of relationships. That might not be like the conventional way we look at achievements, but everything else is an addition. But I was going down the path where I was achieving or accomplishing so many things, but losing touch with family and close friends. And what's the point of having all of these things if you don't share it? And, you know, Rimzi in his episode spoke about doing it for his, you know, his family and doing it for his daughter and all of those things. I used to just do it for myself, for me, as I said, just to see if I could achieve those things. And then there was this survey I did. It was for this entrepreneurial class I was doing. And I scored high in determination, creativity, and I scored almost zero when it came to balance. Because I used to just work and do everything and I didn't care about relationships. Until you start losing people, and then death reminds you so much about life. So after that, I was like, no, like, these people going back to the 28,000 days, these people aren't going to be here forever. Let me maintain, let me work on memories, making memories with these people, right? The achievement is going to come once you make the right moves and you do the right things. Also with the right people, the achievements are going to come, no doubt. As a matter of fact, the achievements are oftentimes easier when you work with the right people. What's the saying? If you want to walk fast, walk alone. If you want to walk far.
If you want to walk far.
Yeah, you know.
Walk together.
Yeah, exactly, you know. And so, like, because as I said, I left home in 2007 when I moved to Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And so the majority of my relationship, which is a terrifying thing, with my family, was over the phone. And even then, I would, like, not call my parents for, like, a week, 2 weeks. Because, you know, you felt like they would always be there. And I had to cut that shit out. Like, no. Because at any point in time, you could get a phone call that somebody's gone. Which is what happened to my grandmother in 2014. Yeah. Like, I was the last person she spoke to before she passed away. And that destroyed me knowing that I wasn't there. No, I'm not omnipresent. You can't be in two places at once. But that was one of the catalysts. I said, listen, you need to cut this shit out. And maintain your relationships, strengthen your relationships. Provide for them if you can provide, or sometimes it's a phone call, you know, sometimes it's a phone call, man. And so that is my greatest achievement. I know far too many people who have grown old and lonely, no family, but have it all in the world's estimation. And that was a recurring dream I used to have, as a matter of fact, that I would be sitting at a bar, 70 something years old, scattered children, no wife, wealthy as hell, but alone. you know, and I think that it's a fear. Like, there's always that fear that switch might go back on, and I'll just be working towards all of these things. You know, you have children all over, you don't care about any relationship, and that's that. But it's a delicate balance, and I think I always have to remind myself that it's not just about getting things done, but it's also about maintaining those relationships.
Tell me something. When did you realize that you had a gift for imparting knowledge on others? And, you know, since I've met you, which has been a while now, I realize that you're somebody that you keep trying to learn. You go after, you keep matriculating every minute, you keep going and going. When did you develop this passion?
So in my room as a child, when everybody else had toys, I had a bookshelf in my room, and my father had that bookshelf stocked. He wouldn't necessarily tell me to read them, but think about it. If you have a bookshelf in your room and you're bored, you just read and everything. So that was my pastime. That was my excitement. In addition to going outside and doing the regular things that boys did, thief, bike, and climb tree and fly kite and all of those things. So there's always, and especially when you spend so much time in your mind, there's always that quest or that thirst to learn more. Always. And then plus the church thing. And just being able to understand the scriptures from a young age, and be able to talk to people and learn and all of these things. It started from there. And I think me teaching people, I think it goes both ways. Like, every conversation I have, whether it's with students or U-rooms or U-natu, I learn something as well. But there's no way for that exchange to be fair if I don't have anything in my mind either. That's where it gets exciting or it gets interesting. So every single step is, or every single opportunity is an opportunity to learn something, which then causes a next opportunity to learn something from somebody and to exchange knowledge and information and all of that. So I think life for me is just one big line where you just sit down and reason and discuss. And discuss things, you know. But there's never that. There is this curse that a lot of people with knowledge have, that they feel like they've arrived, or they feel like they're better than people. I've never had that.
Steph, you know, we know you as a lecturer. Obviously, you are, you know, on the final leg of, you know, getting a PhD. Has this always been a goal of yours? Is this something you've always wanted to reach?
Mm-mm, no. No. I didn't like school. Still don't like school as it is structured now. I think a lot of things about school is very colonial. It's very top down. It's very, you are up there and you have all the information. I'm down here and I don't have all of those information. But it only became a, it only be, it started as, my first degree was, I did it out of revenge. I started it out of revenge because at the time I was an artist and singing and nobody would play my songs on the radio. And so I was like, I'm going to study radio.
Wait, you know how that breeze past that stuff. You know, yo, drop, Rimsey, we can't make him breeze past. Yo,
we have to go pull up on him, exactly.
At the end of this recording, at the end of this episode, you have to go drop some names. We need to go YouTube search. At least.
Fortunately, I destroyed all traces of that past. Nope.
Yeah.
Who knows? That's all that matters.
Two things. Go on. Or at least tell you what was your stage name.
Nope, my stage name was Nope.
People, understand, you know, Steph and Rimsey continuously roast me about my videos I post on my status. About me singing, you know. And you mean to tell me this man had career?
I started off singing gospel and I ended up singing gangster rap.
The most dark and vile
thing you can think about, man. Listen, this is it's
Yo, we need to see a tape, bro. Where is the tape?
I remember seeing it and listening to it one time, and I don't try to remember the name. But
you see it? What you see that?
Call himself.
Listen, man.
Remember, say they played for me one day, man. One day,
Jesus
left gym, man.
Christ.
Yeah, man. I real think that too, man. The man.
Yo. I need to see some evidence, bro.
In depth on YouTube, man.
People, we don't remember my name, man.
Shit.
You see why people for their business, man?
Steph, do not go on your page and delete those videos. We'll find them.
All things have passed away. I don't live that life anymore.
Where were we?
So the intention was to start my own radio station and play my own music. That was it, very selfishly. And then it moved on to, you know, my immediate family. I'll be the first person. You know, I had degrees in my family, but in my nuclear family, I was just me and my younger brother. So I was like, you know, set an example. So I said the degree was for my family. I did the master's because I had a scholarship. And I was in student leadership at that time, so it was just a thing to do. Nothing profound.
Right.
After that, when I realized how much it could have an impact on people, that's when I realized that, you know, there could be a bigger meaning and a bigger aim. Same thing with the PhD. How much it can help people and how much it can mean to people who come from where I come from, or even my family, just to say, listen, the possibilities are endless. Let me do it so you don't have to do it. If you choose to do it, you can do it anyway. But
so, you know, unrelated to that, you mentioned, you know, people perceiving, you know, you putting on tattoos and all of that. It's not the image people typically expect of, you know, a professor then, a lecturer. But we are curious. What's the first tattoo?
Oh, my first tattoo was Proverbs 3:5-6 on my chest, the left side of my chest. Thought about it for about 4 or 5 years. And then, you know, my mother said, you know, you could get it, but once you're not in my house. You know, I'm traditional Caribbean mother. And the day I graduated university, well, the day I was informed that I would, I got my degree, found a tattoo artist, still my tattoo artist to this day. And I got it put on, and I got that scripture put on. Not, it also meant something to me, but of course, if your mother sees a scripture on your chest, you know, she probably feel less, you know? Then when she came for my graduation and she was fine with it, the floodgates were open. That was it. And every time she see one, she said, "That let that be the last one." And I'd be like, "Yeah, man, definitely." But I'd never stop. But she defends me to this day because in her mind, listen, he has done all of these things. If your biggest concern is because he has tattoos, then your priority is in the wrong place. And I also believe that too.
How many tattoos you have now? You have no more space for everybody, man?
Probably about 26 now. But when they all join up, they just count as one. That's how I see it.
What's your biggest regret?
You know, I don't have any. Like, honestly speaking, I don't have any. That's not me being philosophical or anything like that. But honestly speaking, I don't have any. I don't have any. Probably some are in the making.
Nice.
Some are in the making, but I don't have any. They said the only thing we'll say on death is a regret-filled coffin. The mistakes I've made, I've come to terms with those. So it's not regret. I don't think I've ever said I wish I did or no, not at all. No regret, no remorse.
What's the soundtrack of your life?
Jay-Z has something called public service announcement. Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is.
I think, especially the last line. You know, only God could judge me, so I'm gone. Either love me or leave me alone.
Do you deliberately chip on the Trinidad accent when you see women around?
God.
Yeah, man, you know it did not come. You know it did not come. Because listen, people, let me tell you something. I have been around people, listen, I have been around Stefan and we're talking good. And as soon as Stefan see a young lady come around, the accent chip on. And I'm looking at this nigga like, nigga.
Rimley, how dare you accuse Stefan, the man does pull out
the secret weapon and him knows it did not come. He knew it was coming. Like, people, the Stefan that you hear talk on the podcast, if you see Stefan give a presentation, you'll be wondering, oh, who this? Like, come to some, please answer the question.
You dare rightly accuse Stefan doing something like that?
You have to use as a communication specialist. You have to know how and when to use it to get the desired effect. You know, if that's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say anything else. That's all I'm going to say. You know, but it's always intentional. It's always intentional. It's always intentional. Always. Not just around young ladies, people, but as he said, also in presentation, certain formal settings like this now, you hear it now. It's just, when you need it.
Would you rather be crazy rich or deeply in love?
Rich. Sorry, not my answer.
I would rather be deeply in love with money.
My nigga. Hold on. I guess we don't have to ask Natu that. We already know what Natu's answer would be.
Natu would want to be crazy.
Some
rich
Romeo and Juliet.
No, that's what Natu.
You know, I'm curious, what are you most proud of?
I don't know how you know, but that's actually something I contend with, you know, I don't think there's anything that I feel pride about. Not that I feel bad about it, but I don't get stuck on pride. There's all the things that I've done, or if you want to call it achieved, I don't think at any point I sit back and say I'm proud of this. But something I feel blessed about is definitely this podcast. No, like for real. This is a blessing to have an opportunity like this to talk with the bros and to actually help people. Proud would mean that, I mean, we all put a lot of work into this thing. But again, it's just a blessing to be able to do it. It's a blessing to be able to have the talent. It's a blessing to be able to have the space and to have the outlet. It's a blessing more than anything else. But
Steph, buns or titties, man?
Personality.
Yo, get out of here, man. Get out of here.
You ain't catching me in that.
Yo. What up?
What's a personality?
I'm more interested in smiles and eyes than anything else. That's something that people don't know. No, for real. Sure, I'm attracted.
Sure.
Eyes sure. and smiles more than sure.
Yeah.
Natu is you already heard Natu's interest, and you already heard Rimsey's interest with toes and feet and all of that. But I'm interested in smiles and eyes. That's it for me.
Oh, well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you are all thrilled to hear from the man who loves smiles and eyes. But we've come to the end of a series we enjoy doing, right?
Yeah, man.
This has been, you know, an eye-opener. So we thank every one of you for tuning in, for joining us, asking questions on our trivia night. Our question and answers. And you can expect the same from us. This has been dope. And we look forward to the next episode.
Legendary.
Rimsey, where up there? There you go. I'm an artist friend. Big up your damn self.